Media.
It's nearly 12 o'clock and time for the KMXT Midday Report. Thank you for listening to KMXT. On 100.1 FM, it's your public radio station. We're broadcasting from up here on Signal Hill in beautiful Kodiak, Alaska, where it's 54 degrees, mostly cloudy skies. We're looking for those clouds to clear away gradually, and a high of 60 today. Northwest wind gusting as high as 35 miles per hour. For tonight, mostly clear skies, low of 45, west winds to 15 miles per hour. And for tomorrow, partly sunny skies, but with a 10% chance of rain too, high near 57 tomorrow. Coming up on the Midday Report, the number of Alaskans hospitalized with COVID-19 hit a new record yesterday. As a result, Alaska's ICUs are seeing record numbers of patients, and they're full. And an Eagle River Republican senator has been excused from attending Senate floor sessions. We'll find out why right after national headlines.
Live from NPR News in Washington, I'm Windsor Johnston. The Biden administration has temporarily suspended flights carrying Afghan refugees to the United States after four cases of measles were detected in people who have recently arrived in the U.S. White House Press Secretary Jen Psaki says flights were put on hold at the request of the CDC.
These individuals are being quarantined in accordance with public health guidelines, and the CDC has begun full contact tracing.
Psaki says all arriving Afghans are currently required to be vaccinated for measles and other critical vaccinations as a condition for entry into the United States. A week of hearings in the September 11th terrorism case is wrapping up at the U.S. military court in Guantanamo Bay, Cuba. These were the first 9/11 hearings since they were halted by the coronavirus pandemic 19 months ago. But there was little progress toward trial, as NPR's Sasha Pfeiffer reports.
Khalid Sheikh Mohammed and his four co-defendants were in that Guantanamo courtroom this week. So was a new judge. But the hearings ended up showcasing why the case is still dragging on 20 years after the attacks. First, the new judge was questioned about his background. Then the first hearing stopped soon after it began so lawyers could read a new ruling. And the court still hasn't decided if evidence obtained through torture is admissible. Meanwhile, a new chief prosecutor and a new chief defense counsel are about to come on board. Because of all that, a 9/11 trial is now expected to begin at the earliest in 2022. And skeptics increasingly wonder if a trial will ever happen. Sasha Pfeiffer, NPR News.
President Biden is blasting Republican governors who are threatening to sue the administration over its new vaccine mandate. In reinforcing his commitment to keeping schools open safely this fall, the president snapped back against the threat of legal challenges.
Have at it. Look, I am so disappointed that particularly some Republican governors have been so cavalier with the health of these kids, so cavalier with the health of their communities. We're playing for real here.
Biden announced sweeping new mandates on Thursday to combat the highly contagious Delta variant of the coronavirus. The measures include vaccine mandates for federal employees, healthcare workers, large companies, and government contractors. Republicans say Biden's plan amounts to government overreach. At last check on Wall Street, the Dow was down 271 points, the S&P down 34. This is NPR News.
NPR News es presentada a usted en parte por la Providence Kodiak Island Centro de Asesoramiento. Para una cita o más información, por favor, llama al 907-481-2400.
The number of Alaskans hospitalized with COVID-19 reached 206 yesterday, a new high in a string of record totals this week. There were also 846 new virus cases, including non-residents. That's among the highest daily case totals since the state began monitoring the virus. Throughout the day yesterday, hospitals in Anchorage, Fairbanks, the Mat-Su, and the Kenai Peninsula reported that ICUs were either full or near capacity. According to the New York Times, Alaska ranked among the top five states in the U.S. for the rate of positive cases per 100,000 people and the increase in hospitalizations over the last 2 weeks. The state reported no new deaths from COVID-19 yesterday. A total of 442 Alaskans have died from the virus. Alaska's ICUs are seeing record numbers of patients driven by a surge of the Delta variant of COVID-19. And with rising infections, there's no end in sight. For doctors, nurses, and respiratory technicians in the ICUs, watching patients die has become a regular part of the job. Alaska Public Media's Lex Trinan spoke with some providers in Anchorage about how they're coping.
David Kamali, an intensive care physician at Providence Hospital, is finally enjoying a day off after 10 straight days of work. Sitting outside his South Anchorage home, he is exhausted, but he's also haunted by something he saw last week in the COVID ICU.
I'm 56 years old, and for the first time in my entire career, which spans about 20 years, I have a whole ICU with patients who are younger than me. That has never happened before.
Kamali is one of many medical professionals trying to get the public's attention about what's happening inside the COVID ICUs, where the sickest patients come. A significant portion of those patients die, but for patients who need to be intubated or put on a mechanical ventilator, the CDC says about 50% of them will survive. If they have time, nurses will help those patients call their friends and family on FaceTime or over the phone before they're put on a ventilator.
The chances of them making another phone call is as good as a coin toss.
Over the past week, COVID-related hospitalizations have reached record levels nearly every day. Kamali's watching patients die regularly. It's hard for him, but he says it's the nurses and respiratory technicians who are bearing the brunt of the pandemic.
I ask our nurses how they're doing on the break, and they burst into tears. And they can't even explain to me why, because they have gone through so much emotional trauma that is unbearable.
Heidi DeCaro is a respiratory technician at Providence. She worked three 12-hour shifts in a row last week and had four patients die.
When you're crying, people know, they step up, they know you need a minute. So you just mentally have to find a better place. I get to go home to my kids and my husband, and it's really hard to transition to normal life after three horrible days.
She's 38 years old and healthy, and she says she's treating patients that are her same age and build. Seeing patients die regularly is emotionally exhausting, especially when she has to treat people who don't take precautions against COVID, like wearing a mask or getting vaccinated. She says some of her patients don't think COVID is real.
You really do have to bite your tongue because you are a professional, first of all, but you are there to help them. And so you have to work on building a relationship, because there's already a barrier of this isn't real versus this is real.
Karen Good is the clinical manager at the respiratory care department at Providence. She says staff are demoralized seeing how devastating COVID is to patients.
I've heard many of our therapists say, I feel like a failure working in this unit because everything I know to do doesn't work. It doesn't make it different.
She's trying to keep rotating staff so that they aren't in the COVID ICU too long, but statewide staffing shortages mean that almost everyone is working overtime. Good has even suited back up in her scrubs to take shifts on the floor, something she normally doesn't do as a manager. Providers say that support like that from one another is one of the few comforts they have. Here's David Kamali again.
We help each other the best we can. We bring them snacks. We sit down with them. We wipe off their tears. But that's pretty much all we can do.
But he says there is something the public can do to help. Get vaccinated. Reporting in Anchorage, I'm Lex Trennan.
According to an update from the Kodiak Emergency Operations Center, the Kodiak Island Borough has 18 new cases of COVID-19 reported today. 90 cases are currently classified as active locally, and there are 2 active cases currently hospitalized in Kodiak. Eagle River Republican Senator Laura Reinbold has been excused from attending Senate floor sessions starting this weekend through next January. She's been banned from flying on Alaska Airlines for refusing to wear a face mask and is arguing she doesn't have an alternative way of getting back and forth to Juneau. Yesterday, she asked her fellow lawmakers to be excused.
I move and ask unanimous consent to be excused from the call of the Senate September 11th through January 15th because there's no airline other than Alaska Airlines that flies into Juneau during that period that I'm aware of. The political ban is still in place as long as Biden's illegitimate mask mandate is in place.
In general, legislators ask to be excused when they have another commitment that prevents them from attending floor sessions. Reinbold was barred from most of the Capitol briefly during the regular session for not wearing a mask and for refusing to get tested for COVID-19. She eventually started to comply with the rules. The special session must end by Tuesday. No other special sessions have been announced before the regular session begins in January. The Environmental Protection Agency has restarted a process that could block the proposed Pebble Mine more permanently. KDLG's Izzy Ross reports on this latest policy change, which brings the region one step closer to having protections for its waters.
If built, the controversial open-pit copper and gold mine would be one of the largest in North America, at the headwaters of Bristol Bay, upstream from the world's largest sockeye salmon run. But the Environmental Protection Agency said in a court filing Thursday it will reinstate a tool of the Clean Water Act to consider restricting mining in the region. The decision came in response to a lawsuit filed by opponents of the mine. Alana Hurley is the executive director of the United Tribes of Bristol Bay, a coalition of 15 tribes in the region. She says the news is overwhelming.
This is something that our tribes have been fighting for almost 2 decades now. So to know that we are getting back on the right track to finalize protections in this process is just a historic moment for Bristol Bay.
It's the latest development in a policy flip-flop between presidential administrations that spans years. The process is called a proposed determination, but is sometimes referred to as an administrative veto. Section 404C allows the EPA to restrict the disposal of dredged or fill materials in an area or deny it altogether. The EPA under the Obama administration originally proposed a preemptive veto in 2014 before Pebble submitted its permit application, but that decision was never finalized, and the Trump administration withdrew it in 2019. The agency's decision Thursday starts the process again. If finalized this time, it would provide long-term protections to the Bristol Bay waters. Hurley says the United Tribes of Bristol Bay wants to focus on updating and strengthening the protections. More than 10 years ago, tribes in the region called for the EPA to use its authority under the Clean Water Act to prohibit mining in the region. That went further than the agency's proposed determination in 2014 that only restricted certain development.
You know, we really feel like the information that's come out of the permitting process and everything that's happened in the last 7 years really warrants a broader application of those 404C protections, specifically trying to protect the headwaters area of Bristol Bay.
And while Hurley says this is a monumental moment, it isn't the end. When the EPA restarts its review, it will announce a schedule, including opportunities for public input. Governor Mike Dunleavy said in a news conference Thursday that the EPA's decision was undoing the work of the Trump administration.
Preemptive vetoes of any type, or for any project, of any permit, by any company, is dangerous. And will be opposed by our state because of the precedents that will set.
He said those precedents would be problematic for other resource development in the state. The EPA has issued final determinations under the veto process just 13 times in the 50 years of the Clean Water Act. Dunleavy criticized the Biden administration's recent moves to protect areas of the state like the Tongass and praised the Trump administration's approach to resource extraction. But the Pebble Project faced major setbacks even under former President Trump. Last year, the Army Corps denied a permit for Pebble after determining that the plan for the mine would not comply with the Clean Water Act and that the project is not in the public interest. In Dillingham, I'm Izzy Ross.
Juneau's Bartlett Regional Hospital opened a clinic to treat COVID-19 patients this week using monoclonal antibody therapy. It's a method used to reduce symptoms in patients with early-stage COVID infections. Antibodies support the immune system as it defends against the virus.
It reduces the chance of people having to be hospitalized and experiencing severe COVID illness.
The clinic is the brainchild of Chief Nursing Officer Kim McDowell. She says it reduces admissions to the hospital, and right now that's important.
The last couple weeks, we did see quite a few increase of COVID-19 patients. We were seeing them quite frequently through our emergency department, many being admitted, and unfortunately, we did see some deaths from that.
Three people died with COVID-19 at Bartlett in August. McDowell says admissions have begun to level out at the hospital, but she's keeping an eye on the rising case counts in the community. Bartlett has offered the treatment since the first wave of the pandemic, but McDowell says the dedicated clinic will reduce pressure on the limited nursing staff. It's also intended to reduce pressure on statewide health care. If a COVID-19 patient at Bartlett requires intubation, they have to be medevaced elsewhere.
By doing our part with decreasing hospitalizations here, we'll also help our partners in Seattle and in Anchorage, where if we can prevent severe illness, that would prevent somebody being medevaced to an already full hospital.
The treatment is pretty simple. It's a one-time IV that stays in the arm for about 20 minutes. McDowell says patients then stay at the hospital for an hour to make sure they don't have an allergic reaction. 20 years after 9/11, a Fairbanks resident is reflecting on his experience going through rubble of the demolished World Trade Center buildings in New York City.
I was a U.S. Secret Service agent assigned to the Memphis field office on 9/11, and they asked for volunteers from the Secret Service agents in the field to go and do recovery at Ground Zero.
Randy Coyne, who now supervises the U.S. Marshal's office in Fairbanks, says he arrived in New York a couple of weeks after 9/11 and initially worked at Ground Zero.
It was just huge piles of concrete and steel.
Coyne says the bodies of many of those killed were completely lost as the skyscrapers violently collapsed and burned. He says when remains were found, the recovery operation halted.
The firemen would blow a whistle or whoever had found the remains, and everything stopped and got very quiet as they were bringing the remains of the body out, and they draped the remains in an American flag. That's the thing that has stuck with me the entire time. I will never forget that. It happened several times a day while we were there.
Coyne says he spent the second half of his 3 weeks in New York at a landfill where the building rubble was carefully sorted through.
One of the saddest things is we found a lot of people's driver's licenses or ID cards or a wallet or a purse. And you knew that most likely belonged to somebody that didn't make it.
Coyne says the somber recovery work was paralleled by uplifting displays of American spirit.
When we would go in and out of the area, you know, this is lower Manhattan, and it was basically shut down during this time. In the areas that we'd come in or out, there were actually people cheering and waving American flags. It was it made you feel good.
Coyne says he'll never forget how the tragedy of 9/11 brought people together.
This is Alaska Fish Radio. I'm Lainey Welch. Updates on Dungeness crab fishing, that's up after this.
Grundin's Deck Boss 15-inch boots feature a protective toe cap, uppers that won't crack, and compression-molded rubber outsoles for better traction on wet decks. Made in USA.
Southeast crabbers wrapped up an average Dungeness season for a 2.5-month summer fishery that wrapped up in mid-August. Preliminary numbers indicate the catch came in at half of last summer's level. Adam Mesmer is the Alaska Department of Fish and Game's assistant manager for the region.
We ended up just over 3 million pounds for the season, which is right around our 10-year average. Last year, you know, was our second biggest year ever. We were kind of expecting a little bit more than what we caught this year, but we had quite a bit of high soft shell beginning of the season. I think that accounts for the missed poundage.
Last summer's Dungy catch came in at 6 million pounds, valued at nearly $10 million at the docks. But despite a lower catch, this season's price made the harvest worth much more to the fleet of 205 permit holders.
Yep, it was our highest price ever. Averaged at 427, came out to almost $13 million fishery, and that penciled out to about $63,000 per permit.
Last year's summer price was just $1.67 a pound. Southeast crabbers get another go when the Dungeness fishery reopens on October 1st. Dropping pots for Dungeness is ongoing around Kodiak and the Westward region until the end of October. Around 1.5 million pounds is likely to be the tally for 20 Kodiak boats, down about 1 million from last year. But the outlook is fairly optimistic, says Nat Nichols, area manager for ADF&G.
Here in Kodiak, that makes three seasons in a row, over 1 million pounds, and I've heard some reports that there's a lot of crab that are just a little bit short of the stick, so reports like that sort of give, you know, are optimistic for next year.
The Kodiak price is $4.35 a pound. Nichols says over 400,000 pounds of Dungies have been hauled up at Chignik, and Alaska Peninsula fishermen are having the region's best catches, now at 1.3 million pounds. Find links at alaskafishradio.com. Fish Radio is also brought to you by OBI Seafoods. In Kodiak, I'm Lainey Welch.
This is the Island Messenger, a look at personal messages, the weather, and community announcements.
This is the Alaska Department of Fish and Game with Kodiak Commercial Salmon Fishery Advisory Announcement Number 49. This announcement was issued at 10 a.m. September 8th. The Iqaluit Bay and Outer Katoy Bay sections of the Afognak District will close to commercial salmon fishing at 6 p.m. Thursday, September 9th. As previously announced, the following areas will open to commercial salmon fishing for 78 hours from noon Wednesday, September 8th until 6 p.m. Saturday, September 11th. The Outer Iqaluit section of the Southwest Kodiak District, the Humpy Deadman section of the Alitak District, the Eastside Kodiak District, the Northeast Kodiak District, the Southeast Afognak Raspberry Strait, Southwest Afognak, Northwest Afognak, Shuyak Island, Paul's Bay, Paranosa Bay, Northeast Afognak, and Duck Bay sections of the Afognak District, the Mainland District, and the Anton Larson Bay, Sheraton Bay, Kajuyak Bay, Terror Bay, Inner Uganic Bay, Spiriton Bay, Zachar Bay, and Uyak Bay sections of the Northwest Kodiak District. The following areas remain open to commercial salmon fishing until further notice: the Sturgeon, Halibut Bay, and Outer Karlik sections of the Southwest Kodiak District, the Central and North Cape sections of the Northwest Kodiak District, and the Cape Alitak, Alitak Bay, Mosier Bay, and Olga Bay sections of the Alitak District. Until further notice, in that portion of the Northwest Kodiak and Southwest Kodiak districts, south of the latitude of Cape Kuliak, Chinook salmon 28 inches or greater in length may not be retained by purse gear in the commercial fishery and must be returned to the water unharmed. Closed waters are shown on the Kodiak Area Salmon Statistical Chart and detailed in the Commercial Salmon Fishing Regulations. Statistical charts, harvest strategies, and commercial salmon fishing regulations are available at the Kodiak Fish and Game Office. Recent salmon fishery information may be obtained by calling the department's 24-hour recorder phone at 486-4559.
Kodiak Island Borough Assembly member Julie Cavanaugh has resigned, leaving a vacant one-year seat. Interested in serving your island home but can't commit to a three-year term? This is your chance to be a voice for your friends and neighbors. Applications are available online at www.kodiakak.us or in the borough clerk's office. Fill one out and submit your application by 4:30 p.m. September 20th to be considered for appointment to this seat. We need your vision and your leadership. Submit an application today. Good afternoon and welcome to your Friday, 10th of September edition of the Island Messenger. The sun rose today at 7:30. It won't set again until 8:41. That will give us 13 hours and 11 minutes of daylight, a loss of 4 minutes and 55 seconds compared to yesterday. Our record high for this date was 72, set in 1915, and our record low was 33, set in 1913. Presently, a rather pleasant 59 degrees on our way to a predicted high of 60. Blustery winds, though, northwest winds to 25, gusting as high as 35 miles per hour. For tonight, we are looking for mostly clear skies, low of 45, west wind to 15. And for tomorrow, partly sunny skies, although a 10% chance of rain after 4 p.m., high near 57 tomorrow with calm winds turning to the southeast to about 5 tomorrow morning. We have a high tide coming up here on the east side at 4:56 p.m., nearly 5 p.m. That'll be a 9.4-foot tide, followed by a low tide at 11:17 p.m. of minus 3/10 of a foot. Over on the west side, your high tide will happen at 5:25 p.m. in Larsen Bay. That will be a 15.3-foot tide, followed by a low tide of 11:50 p.m. of minus 8/10 of a foot. Looking at our marine weather, for Marmot Island to Sitkanak, Kodiak's east side offshore, we do have a gale warning for today. Northwest wind to 35 knots, seas to 15 feet off our east side. For tonight, west 20, seas to 9 feet. And for tomorrow, southwest 20, seas to 7 feet. Over in the Shelikof, small craft advisory through tonight. West 25 right now, seas to 6 feet. For tomorrow, southwest 20, seas to 5 feet. The City of Kodiak and the Kodiak Island Borough Cooperative Relations Committee will hold a meeting next Wednesday, September 15th at 4 p.m. in the Kodiak Public Library's multipurpose room. The meeting's open to the public. Agendas and meeting packets are available at the City of Kodiak website. For more information, call the City Clerk at 486-8636. Kodiak Public Health is hosting a voluntary COVID-19 vaccine clinic for all families and students aged 12 and up. That's happening next Thursday, September 16th, at 3:30 to 7:30 p.m. at the high school. It's happening in the high school auditorium foyer, and the students under 18 must be accompanied by parent or guardian. But again, that's next Thursday, 3:30 to 7:30 p.m. at the high school COVID-19 vaccine clinic. Theater is back. Come audition for the Kodiak Arts Council's theater stage play of the holiday classic Miracle on 34th Street. When a department store Santa claims he's the real Kris Kringle, his case gets taken all the way to the Supreme Court, and a little girl's belief makes all the difference. Directed by Jesse Marlowe, Miracle on 34th Street has roles for adults, teens, and children ages 8 and up. Auditions are taking place at the Gerald C. Wilson Auditorium main stage today at 6 p.m. and tomorrow at 11 a.m. You only need to attend one audition event. Proof of vaccination against COVID-19 will be required for all cast and crew members ages 12 and up. For more details, go to the Kodiak Arts Council website at www.kodiakarts.org or call them at 942-5840.
Listen for the Island Messenger here on Public Radio KMXT three times a day, Monday through Friday at 9 a.m., during the Midday Report at 12:20, and in the evening at 7 o'clock. If you have a community announcement or personal message, including lost and found items or pets, you can call KMXT at 486-3181, fax us at 486-2733, or email psa@kmxt.org. KMXT is supported in part by Orion's Mountain Sports, featuring equipment, clothing, and footwear for your outdoor lifestyle. Orion's Mountain Sports, located at 1247 Mill Bay Road. Hello, Kodiak, and welcome to the September 10th edition of Island Byways. I'm Pam Foreman. Blustery, blustery days. After so much calm weather, we are just a wee bit spoiled.
It looks like the trees and willows might hang on to some of their leaves for the changing colors a little later this month. As a photographer, I can only hope. But the grasses have already started turning to their autumn mix of gold, green, and brown. The nagoon berry plants and other ground cover plants started turning colors quite a while ago, so there's a lot of fall color out there already. Lots of fall color in the rivers, streams, and lakes, too. Whether you are at Lake Rose Teed looking for colorful old sockeye to photograph, or fishing the Buskin River or the Olds River for silvers, there's lots of color to be found out there. Some pretty large brown bear specimens out there looking to fill up on fish before winter, too. So pay attention when you're walking through the grasses or woods to get to your favorite spot on the shoreline. Theater season is back, and the Kodiak Arts Council is happy to announce auditions this weekend for Miracle on 34th Street. Roles for adults, teens, and children are available. You can choose to audition either on Friday at 6 p.m. or Saturday at 11 a.m. at the Gerald C. Wilson Auditorium. Audition packets are available at kodiakarts.org. Performance dates for the show will be December 3rd, 4th, and 5th. And registration is now open for KMXT's Run the Rock, a marathon, half marathon, 10K, and 5K, all happening on October 9th. You can find out all the details at kmxt.org. Just look for the Run the Rock registration button on the right-hand side of the page if you're on your computer, or scroll down if you're looking on your phone. And finally, if you've missed an edition of Island Byways, you can always catch it as a podcast on Spotify or iTunes. And that's it for Island Byways this week. Have fun and stay safe out there. Thanks for listening.